This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. And Adam, we wanted to start today with some news, and we're going to go negative right off the top about a 3-0 team that's won every game by 30 points with some injury news about James Devlin, the fullback, Pro Bowl fullback, that is probably going to be out for the season. He might have a chance to return later in the season, but he's got a upper back neck disc injury, which just sounds terrible, especially for a fullback. But in terms of the Patriots, what do you think this means for them moving forward?
Well, this definitely impacts their I formation game, right? I mean, who's their fullback in that, you know? And that's a huge part of their offense. Not that it's impossible to find a good fullback, but it's hard to find one as good as James Devlin. So, it's tough. You know, I think it definitely impacts the running game for sure, at least in that aspect. And yeah, you can't, you know, losing a guy like Devlin is never going to be a positive.
Yeah, so the power running game with the I formation and the 21 personnel, I think for the time being, at least until we see with our own eyes that Ya'Qub Johnson can play, is dead. You know, that kind of formation is dead. This team is not going to be that kind of team like it was last year. And really over the last couple of years, the last 4 years, the Patriots have been in 21 personnel with the fullback, with the tight end, more than any other team in the league. So they are in love with that personnel grouping, which does make you think that maybe we might see Ya'Qub Johnson a little bit more as the season progresses until Devlin comes back, or if he doesn't come back at all. But really, last year down the stretch, we know how successful they were with it. All 9 of the touchdowns in the playoffs last year on the ground had Devlin on the field leading the way as a battering ram, mostly for Sony Michel. So there's been concerns about the running game. Now you really lose the power running aspect of your team. This team's going to look a lot more like it did. I don't want to say 2011 because that was more of like a two tight end team, obviously, right, with Gronk and Hernandez, but more of like a 07 team almost. Won't match that production, but they're going to look like that in terms of really the passing game funneling through the wide receivers, 3-4 wide receiver sets. That's going to now be kind of their bread and butter.
Right. And I think their running game will also sort of be out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, sort of emptying the box a little bit, maybe against 5, even 6-man boxes, and trying to, you know, run the ball against a lighter box. Going under center right now and running the ball that way doesn't really make sense if you don't have a fullback you can really trust. So it kind of limits the stuff and their versatility, but I still think they'll be able to run the ball. It's just going to look different.
Yeah, it's going to look different. And that's a great point, is that none of this is necessarily – I don't think any of this is going to cost the Patriots anything. I don't want to kind of over-exaggerate the importance of a fullback, you know what I mean, and act like this is going to be something that's going to cost them the Super Bowl, or is this, you know, huge loss in terms of their long-term success. They can win in other ways. We're just going to have to get used to seeing them do it differently. And right, I think that Patriots fans are really going to like it, because I think that Tom Brady is going to throw the ball a lot. And that, yeah, I think people are really going to like. Before we talk a little bit about the game on Sunday, let's talk about this running game, which is a little bit about the game on Sunday, I guess. And just the, you know, fact that the running game really has not been able to get going. I have a few thoughts on it, but what are yours, and where do you see this going moving forward?
Well, you know, I think it has to do with a lot of things, like everybody's talked about. But, you know, I mean, this offensive line is different right now with the injuries. I mean, you can't get around that. No Devlin, obviously, like you've mentioned, not having Gronkowski in there as, you know, a de facto sixth offensive lineman in running games and wham blocks and stuff like that really hurts. But I still think it's, you know, the pass to set up the run right now. And, you know, that's kind of what you're looking at. Sony isn't really productive right now with how things are currently set up. But, you know, in other ways, like Burkhead's had a few nice runs. You can still sort of, like I was saying, just spread things out a little more and run that way. You don't have a dominant blocking tight end. I think Izzo's good, but I don't think he's like a dominant guy when it comes to that. And so I think, you know, the running game it's important. And we were sort of hoping to see Michelle break out, but he can't really do it if he's running into opposing defenders every time he, you know, gets the ball. So I think it just sort of forces McDaniels to be a little bit more creative. I think the running game is going to involve, you know, some of these jet sweeps and those little flip passes and stuff like that. You know, just getting creative.
Yeah, I think that they're trying right now to figure out what they can do running the football with this new offensive line, makeshift offensive line, whatever you want to call it. McDaniels has tried a lot of different blocking schemes that we haven't seen necessarily that much over the last couple of years here in New England. They've been kind of bringing out a split zone action run that is like McDaniels must have watched like some Lincoln Riley or something like that over the summer, because it's a college-based kind of package that they've been running out of the gun, and they're running a lot of split zone, even out of under center as well, which I think is interesting. The other thing that I think, you know, the element of Marshall Newhouse, I think Ted Karras in this respect as well, the offensive line right now isn't as athletic or as fast as it's been in the past. It's really been a unit with, even with Trent Brown, it just for his size, just moved so well. And obviously with Nate Solder, he was one of the better left tackles in terms of athleticism in the league. Without those guys, without Gronk being a freak athlete, things are just those outside runs that they're trying to hit. They love those like kind of outside zone plays where they're going to try to get off tackle and get outside on the perimeter. They're just not hitting as fast as they used to. And this year you can kind of see that offensive line slowing down a little bit and not being quite as dynamic athletically. They obviously still have the two guards that are really great athletes in Mason and Tooney, but the other guys I think are not quite as fast as they were in years past in those spots. You mentioned Izzo. I think that the periphery guys, the tight ends, right now Izzo I think is having a pretty – he's replacement level, I would call him. You know, he's having a little bit of a tough time. He's not really moving people in the running game. He's getting pushed around a little bit too. He's a little bit more undersized than I expected, which I think might be a reason why he – went in the seventh round and not a little bit higher on top of his limitations as a receiver. So a little bit of a lack of kind of power up front and athleticism. Those outside runs, I think that they're probably going to end up having to throw those out this year for the most part, especially without Devlin, and just going with stuff that's between the tackles, trying to get those guys to just get up field and move bodies forward is really, I think, going to be the next step for them schematically as a run game. I think we're so quick to judge a lot of this. We are only in week three or going into week four now. So I think they're still really trying to experiment a lot with this running game and kind of figure out what works and what doesn't work with the guys that they have and the personnel that they have. The other thing about it that we, you know, got to hit on is the whole thing with Sony. And is it Sony's fault? Is it the line's fault? I tend to lean more towards the blocking side of that equation for sure. I think that Sony, there was a few instances in the game on Sunday where he had some opportunities to kind of get into the teeth of the defense and was taking a little bit longer to do so. And there was one play where he broke a tackle in the backfield. I'm sure you remember it. It was one of those outside toss plays again. And he broke a tackle in the backfield and he had a one-on-one with the safety out in the flat and he just couldn't make the guy miss, you know, and that those at those junctures, there's one where he's running in it's a 2 yard gain on the 4 yard line. The whole opening, the middle opens up and Sony kind of just takes a little while to hit that hole and it closes on him and he wasn't able to get it in. And then that one, obviously on the perimeter, those are the little plays that Sony, I think, needs to make. And they talk about it a lot of times with the running backs, that once you get one-on-one in space, that's on you, right? Like, it's right. That's where you need to create. That's where you need to force a missed tackle. The other element of it is, of course, the play calling. And they are 75% run since 2018 with Sony. They're 73% run this year as well. But I think the other side of that is he's been on the field for 20 pass snaps. They're averaging over 12 yards per attempt when he's on the field and they pass the ball because they're throwing a lot of play action. And the teams are really biting on the play action because of the tendency to run the football with Sony, I think, is definitely an element of that. So that's kind of the part of the equation is if you go back to more 50-50 balance with Sony, is that play action passing game going to be as effective? Probably, but maybe not.
Right. Sort of circling back to the offensive line when you talk about the athleticism.
Yeah.
David Andrews, you're looking at a very athletic center.
Yeah.
Somebody that could really reach out to the second level and find linebackers very well.
Yeah.
And get his hands on them. You know, that's, you know, Karras is bigger, but he's not as fleet of foot, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, if you're going back to that and, you know, if you're going with zone blocking schemes, you want a guy more like Andrews than Karras for that. Not saying Karras is a bad player or anything like that, but just it's more suited to Andrews's game.
Totally.
And you're right. You know, if you're going to be one-on-one with a guy, that's on you to make the play. I do feel that, you know, I guess transitioning to our next thing, it would be kind of cool to see what Harris could bring to this.
For it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, again, like a between the tackles guy, how good he is, how slippery he is, with those one-on-ones when he is in a very short, tight space with another tackler, how good he is with that, I think that's something to at least consider.
Yeah, you know, Sony is I think is a great runner still. I just think that Sony is a downhill guy, right? You got to get him. You got to get him the hole initially because he's not Deion Lewis. He's just not going to do that. He's not going to make five guys miss. He's not going to run through a bunch of tackles and break himself into open field and create yards after contact and do all that kind of stuff. It's just not his game. What is his game is once he hits the hole hard with acceleration, and then he's really good at kind of getting himself into space at the second and third level from there and setting up blocks from his receivers and from his tight ends down the field and linemen they pull out and stuff like that. And then going from there, he's a guy that kind of – he's got great patience, he's got great vision, and he's got great burst. And so that you need to create runways for him. He's not going to just dance around back there like he's Barry Sanders and make six guys miss and then go upfield. I think Damian Harris has a little bit more of that in his game than Sony does. A little bit more wiggle, a little bit more lateral agility to maybe be able to do some of that stuff, but he still has the we talked about it in the preseason, and he doesn't hit the hole as hard as Sony does. You know, he doesn't have that kind of sudden burst and acceleration, but he does add that other element of maybe being able to catch the ball out of the backfield a little bit more than what we've seen from Sony. I think he can do a little bit more of that. Why the Patriots won't throw the ball to Sony, why they won't involve him in the passing game, I don't know. I really can't figure it out. You know, there's obviously a couple of big reasons why. You know, maybe he's just not catching on to the playbook. Maybe he's got stone hands and we just don't know that yet because they don't throw him the ball. You know, maybe he's just not being in the right spot for him has been difficult. I don't know what it is, but obviously they don't see it. The other element of it that I think it might be it is that James White and Rex Burkhead are really, really good pass catching backs.
Yeah.
So if you have two of the best pass catching backs in the league, then throwing it to your third best pass catching back is really, you know, why would you do that? You know, it really doesn't make much sense. Now, Burkhead, James White, they're averaging pretty decent yards per carries this season. It's really Sony that's torpedoing it. But I do also want to stress, like you said, those are like nickel and dime. Those are sub runs. right? Those are nickels, dimes. They're getting the similar boxes, but the fact is that those are defensive backs in the game, not linebackers.
Right.
And teams are playing more two down linemen, maybe three, whereas with Sony, they're playing their three or four base looks against him. And they're really keying on the run and trying to stop that run on early downs. So it's a completely different animal. So you can't just look at Rex Burkhead's yards per carry and say, well, they're higher than Sony, so I don't understand, you know, why Sony can't run and Rex can't. Because it's a completely different animal. It's apples to oranges. Are we going to continue to see more Brandon Bolden? Like, is Brandon Bolden now, like, going to be the second pass or third pass catching back? He kind of seemed to be over Sony in the depth chart for those two running back pony sets, which I just thought was really surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Brandon's got a lot of ability, and he's a little bit underrated by the people around here. I mean, I do think what Bill likes about him is Brandon's versatility. He's got a thick build to him. He's somebody that can take a pounding between the tackles. He runs hard, and he can catch the ball sometimes when you throw it to him. I mean, he's dropped passes before, but I think, you know, he's a trusted guy. He's been around the team for a long time. And I think, you know, you don't necessarily always know what they're going to do when he's in the game either. But I think with some of this usage stuff, especially the last game, knowing who they're playing and knowing how quickly it got out of hand, a lot of this personnel stuff is sort of seeing who's like an exhibition game, you know,
it's experimentation. It's the same thing with the run game and the blocking. Like, they're trying to figure out right now what they can run, like what they're blocking, they can run with the guys that they have.
Right. I don't think you'll see that this week, but I think that's kind of what we're seeing with a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put too much stock into what we've seen in some of these games, because they're putting stuff on film for other teams to prepare for, and B, they're just trying to figure out what's working.
Yeah, that's really what I think it is too. That's the second part, especially, is just like, I think that we really want to see this offense look like it's going to look at the end of the season right away, like the defense has. You know, you see the defense, it comes out of the gate, it has given up 3 points in 3 weeks, and you're like, this is awesome, right? You know, we want to continue this. And then offensively, it's been a little bit more touch and go there, certainly not in week one, but maybe in week two and week three at different points. I thought the Jets defense actually played pretty well in the second half of this game also.
Right.
Early on in the game, there was coverage busts just all over the field. Like, they just kind of forgot to cover Ryan Izzo. They bit really hard on play action on both that Izzo play and Philip Dorsett's touchdown, and both guys were just uncovered. They really had a couple of different coverage busts that led to some big plays against them in really the first quarter, like the first three or four possessions of the game for the Patriots. Once they got their communication down and they figured out who everybody was covering and they limited those busts a little bit, they kind of did a couple different variations of cover two, where they had five guys kind of underneath at that 5 to 10 yard range to take away all the short stuff that the Patriots love to run. And they put two or three guys deep, and they really kept things in front of them on the deep end of the spectrum also, until Brady threw into Josh Gordon along the sideline and he mossed the guy. So they had a good I thought that Greg Williams had a pretty good plan in place. And once the players actually started executing the game plan after the really a messy first quarter or so for the Jets defense, they looked pretty good. We want to talk about Tom Brady as well. I think that in some ways, because the defense is playing so well, because of the injuries on offense, because of the Antonio Brown storyline, there's a million reasons that Tom Brady, his play on the field is kind of not being talked about at all. You know, about how good he has been, first of all, and second of all, just how he's playing in general. I just don't think that a lot of people are talking about it because there's so many other storylines with this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost sort of taking him for granted in a sort of way.
Yeah.
Because you see what happens when you put in Jared Stidham and everybody loses their gambling money. Yeah.
Vegas, our friends at BetOnline.ag took a hit there. Or maybe they didn't. They might have actually profited from that
situation. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But I was definitely upset. Anyway, I mean, honestly, like Brady looks fine, and honestly, with the different guys that are coming in and out, I don't really see. I think it's impressive with the moving pieces at the wide receiver position. No Gronkowski, Edelman, comes out, and Edelman having, not a lot of work in the preseason. But of course you expect them to just have that anyway. But Gordon looks great. He's fine with Dorsett. He's finding Izzo too. Brady's just doing what he's been doing. He's been taking what the defense is giving him, being accurate, making the right decisions, moving well in the pocket. There's no signs of a slowdown, which at his age is kind of crazy. And I think, he's been playing outstanding. Like you've been saying, he's almost been playing better this year than a lot of the years recent. And you can say what you will about some of the teams he's been facing, but I mean, I don't know. Like, guy's been playing really well, and I don't know if you can really find any fault with how he's been playing so far.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is that this three-game stretch to start the season, regardless of what you think about the opponents, just the way that he looks, the way he's moving, the way he's throwing the ball, the accuracy, the decision-making, the fact that he's not tentative like he was at times last year in the pocket, all those types of things. This might be like the best three-game stretch that we've seen from Brady since his MVP season a couple of years ago. This is way better than any three-game stretch that I saw of him last year at any point, I would say. And it's really what it comes down to is that he is so fast at seeing things pre-snap, because the Patriots bring a lot of guys in motion. They give him a ton of indicators, right? So almost every single play, there's some sort of motion attached to it. And if the guy goes with his man, then it's man-to-man. If the guy doesn't, he knows it's zone, and he just knows where he's going with the ball. Or at least he knows what side of the field he's reading first, right? And then he can kind of go from there. There was one throw, actually the very first play of the game. The Jets ran this kind of inverted cover two. It wasn't a coverage that I am really that familiar with, to be honest. And it was a different kind of style of coverage. And Belichick talked about it on his conference call, too, where it looks like it's cover two, but it has different principles, so you have to react to it differently. And he had Edelman, they had a dagger concept on the right side. They had Gordon running a dig from the boundary and Edelman up the seam. And it was a busted coverage. Edelman was wide open up the seam. And I think Brady thought that it was post safety. I think he thought it was like a cover three or cover one or something like that. And he didn't see Edelman. And then from that point on, once he saw that coverage once, that kind of unique look, that was it. He knew exactly where he was going with the ball after that every single time, and it really only took him that one time to kind of sniff out what they were doing and what that look was going to look like. I'm sure he had seen it on film, but he had just never played against it, or at least hasn't played against it recently. I'm sure he's played against everything, but it was a little bit different. And he was able to kind of dissect it from that point on and really know where to go with the ball. But other than that, I mean, there was one throw that he threw low to Edelman, and I know he throws the low balls on purpose to avoid the big hits for Julian Edelman, but there was one where he was almost intercepted in the middle of the field that ended up hitting the ground and didn't count as an interception. That was really the only one big minus throw that I had him down for in the entire game, and that's really been kind of the case all of these three games. It's one or two decisions that you could nitpick and maybe one or two throws that you could nitpick, and that's it. Whereas at points last year, it was a lot of mistakes at times, certainly in like the point of the season where he was injured or banged up last year with that knee. So I think that it's not getting talked about enough. I also think around the league, a lot of these young quarterbacks, I mean, Mahomes might be running away with MVP in September. So that might be, we'll see where that goes. But guys like Dak and Lamar Jackson, they're playing so well, and they're kind of the hot new ticket out there as well, that, Brady's getting kind of pushed to the side a little bit because everybody's kind of sick of him and sick of just kind of talking about it all the time. But he's playing really well. The other guy that's playing pretty well and I think has kind of bought into the Patriot way, so to speak, maybe even more so this year than last year, is Josh Gordon, who seems to be in a great place mentally. You know, I don't want to kind of guess, but based off of the way that we've interacted with him and all those kinds of things, it sounds like he's in a good spot. And on Sunday, he was a warrior out there. I mean, he broke his thumb or finger or something like that on a face mask, and then he landed hard on his back. He came back from multiple kind of little nicks along the way and just kept on coming, which I thought was impressive.
Yeah, and he's making incredible catches.
Yeah,
he's the one
on the sideline is one of the best catches I've seen.
Yeah, like you can cover him perfectly, and he's getting the ball.
Yeah,
you know, he's grabbing it. So it's impressive. He's, you know, obviously that first week, how good after the catch he was, as far as, you know, almost like a tight end out there, you know, running people over, you know, he can do so many things well. He was really good for them last year. He's even better for them this year. And that's kind of what they needed. And he's really filled that role. I mean, you know, you just hope he keeps it up. You know, you hope he stays on the right track. So far, that's what he's been doing. And you just sort of love what he gives the team. I think that, you know, he's a unique weapon that most teams really don't have. He's that really big, you know, fast, physical guy with really excellent hands, and he's good getting open. Even if he's covered, he's kind of open, you know. Yep. And after the catch, he's a powerful runner, and so I think, you know, he's, you know, they got a lot of good receivers. He's you know, I don't know if he's their best, but he's definitely up there right now.
Yeah, and I would say that the point that you made about him being able to go up and catch the ball and win those kind of contested catch situations, that's so huge for this team now because Gronk is not here. And that was Gronk's thing. That was one of many of Gronk's things, but he was obviously one of the best guys in the league at going up onto the top shelf and catching those passes above his head. And, you know, the ridiculous one-handed catches he's had in his career. Now they kind of have a little bit of that element with Josh Gordon. The other thing that they kind of have with Josh Gordon now that I think is different is what you hinted at. He looks like a lot more comfortable in the system, and they're able to move him around a lot more this year than they were last year. Last year, he was on the boundary like 90% of the time. You know, he hardly ever played in the slot. They're playing him a lot more in the slot this year. He's moving inside. He's moving outside. He's moving from side to side from the formation as well, different splits. You know, they're able to do a lot more with him now that he's more comfortable in the playbook and in the system and more comfortable with Brady as well. So those are all good signs, too. And I think that that's kind of the next step for him, obviously, is kind of learning this offense. You know, he's probably not going to learn it ever really to like Julian Edelman's level. You know, I don't know if anybody will ever catch up to Edelman. But you know what I mean. It just a better understanding of it now has really allowed him to play multiple alignments, and that allows them to run him in multiple routes. Like he's running Gronk seam, you know, now.
Right.
That's a Gordon route along with the Dorsett route, but it's mostly been a Gordon route. Also, before we move on to the defensive side of the ball, I just actually finished up watching the coach's film of the Patriots offense, and the Jets defense could not cover Julian Edelman. I mean, that guy, he was open on every play. I really think Brady could have thrown it to him on every single play if he wanted to. The route running detail that Edelman has and just the ability to, he was making guys in man, it was like the Super Bowl. Like he was making guys in man coverage just completely whiff. And he was beaten by 5, 6, 7 yards at a time. The drop that he had was a bad one. But if you watch the route before the drop, he absolutely shakes the corner out of his shoes. I mean, he's nowhere near him, and it's man coverage.
Right.
And there was a couple of other instances like that. His touchdown, he just a perfect, you know, back of the end zone kind of route. It just watching him run routes, is, especially when you can watch the all 22 and you see the whole thing develop, is really, really cool. He's an amazing route runner. And the Jets, he had, I think, 65 yards and a touchdown and a half of play before he got hurt. If he had played the whole game, he was going over $120, $130 easily. And he might have had a long one, too.
Yeah, and here's the other thing about him is how do you double him when there's those other guys on the field?
Yeah, you know? And even when you double him, they tried to bracket him on that third down play, and Brady just threw it to him anyways, and they converted third down, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like you have to pick your poison because, you know, he's deadly, you know, on those short and intermediate routes, and maybe you want to give him that sometimes to avoid the bigger plays. But I mean, at the end of the day, they're just going to march right down the field and score that way. So I think it's been proven over time that Edelman is just one of these guys that if you have one guy covering him, he'll find the open space. He'll lose you on what with his footwork and his body control. His hands are so good that even if you converge on him as soon as the ball gets there, he's making the catch anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's just one of these guys who, you know, is there's no way of real there's no Edelman beater. You know what I mean? There's no one defense or one way or one player that you have on your team that's going to just take Julian Edelman away. I mean, you can limit him. You can probably limit the yards after catch. You can probably keep him from, you know, beating you too much, but he's going to get his yards if he's going to get open, and he's Brady's going to find him. So, it's just a wonderful weapon for them to have.
Yeah. And he's really great. I think there's two things. I mean, he's great at a lot of pieces of route running, but I think the two things that he's really, really great at, the first thing is in his initial release in stem, the ability to attack leverage and then set up defensive backs for his breaks is just excellent. Like, guys are kind of putting him on inside leverage a lot of the time, and he will just attack that short arm on the inside. He's going to make you kind of go over there and cover that and square up to him, and then he just quickly breaks out of it, and he can just leave guys in the lurch. The other thing that he's great at is that once he makes that break, a lot of the times when he's getting upfield, he does what's called re-stemming, which he gets vertical again. And then he has you on his back, and he's like up the field, and he's got you on his back. And now he can go left or right, right? Because he's got you, he's on top of you, he's stacked you now. So now he can go left or right, and he re-stems it to kind of hold that position. And then all of a sudden he'll like throw a little shoulder or head fake one direction and then just explode out the other way. And it just leaves. That's what he did on the touchdown. If you go watch the touchdown again, that's exactly what happens. He re-stems it. He stacks the DB. He re-stems it. He has that two-way go, and then he just fakes it and then goes out to the pylon. And the DB has no chance. I mean, there's just – if you're on an island with him in that situation, there's really no chance for you. All right, before we move over to the defensive side of the ball, the football season is back, and now you can get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. I know Adam used betonline.ag because he was upset that the Patriots didn't cover on Sunday. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit and make your bets on your favorite professional or college team. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. Will Mahomes throw for 56 TDs? I don't think so. Can the Pats go undefeated? Maybe. Bet on all of this with the fastest odds, updates, and payouts with our newest sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to betonline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. Get into all the action today with betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And now we can talk about the defense, which just continues to keep balling out. I mean, this unit, I know that they're not playing the Niners and the 1989ers. They're not playing the greatest show on turf, but they are just absolutely shutting teams down. And I sent out a tweet yesterday that showed where all five of their starting secondary, Gilmore, John Jones, Jason McCourty, Pat Chung, and Devin McCourty, all ranked in the top 10 at their position in PFF grade. So the entire starting secondary is top 10 in the position. They have the 1, 2, and 8, I believe it is, corners in the PFF system right now, which is just incredible.
It's crazy. And also there was the stat I saw somebody tweeted out that for the first three games, nobody other than the Patriots has allowed an offensive touchdown in the Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
accurate.
That's staggering.
Yeah.
It's really, it's really every level of the defense is top notch. And, if you're going to say, well, they played these teams, well, they're really just carrying over from last season. And, yeah. And they were playing good teams then, the Chiefs, the Rams, those are good offenses. And they've added a guy in Jamie Collins, who really is, talk about what they hoped when they drafted this guy. We talked about this last week, but yeah. this is a guy that's a dominant football player right now. He's a dominant linebacker. He's, and you can use him in a number of different ways, but how do you block this guy? Where do you, where is he when he lines up? You have to know where he is. The coverage, like you said, with the corners, I mean, where are the breakdowns, where are the guys running away from these corners? You don't see it. The guys aren't open. The rush is on also, where's the rush coming from? Who knows? And it's an aggressive defense. It's a dominant defense. It's the type of defense that, like we've said before, the Patriots have had defenses where they've held teams to low point totals, but they're giving up third downs. They're not sacking the quarterback. They're not turning the ball over. They're not forcing three and outs. You're seeing all that with this team. They're scoring points.
They're three and out almost 40% of the time right now,
which is unheard of in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's the type of defenses that the Patriots fans used to fantasize about when they played other teams. Like, oh, well, we have a good defense, but it's not like this.
Yeah.
This one passes the eye test as well as every analytical test. In that respect, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, Jets were 0 for 12 on third down on Sunday. And the first three opponents, I think, are 5 for 39, I believe it is, on third down. Passer rating allowed is 44 right now. So it's insane. And I think the go back to the corner play for a second. On Sunday, there was a lot of instances. First of all, they're running these, especially against a team like the Jets that have a really good back in Le'Veon, they're running these five-man fronts with really only two defensive linemen, and they're playing just a bunch of linebackers right now. And they got Collins, they got Van Noy, and they got John Simon all playing in their beast. It's a base defense, essentially. That's the principles. Those are the rules. But those three guys are playing on the line of scrimmage roles. And Simon, sometimes it's Winovich if it's a more of like a passing situation instead of Simon. But Simon is basically playing as a five technique defensive end, but in a 2-point stance. So it gives them a little bit more athleticism at that spot, and a little bit more speed. I think that if they had some more depth at defensive end that they trusted, maybe they wouldn't be going this direction, but this is the personnel that they have, so they are. And so they're playing these five-man fronts, so you can't run against them. Lawrence Guy just and Danny Shelton are just plugging up everything against the run. Like, those two guys are just, especially Guy. I mean, Danny's been great, too. But on Sunday, Lawrence Guy was just—he was parking his butt in those A gaps, and there was no moving him, And he's really had a really good couple of years here going on now, a guy that's been super underrated throughout the league. So you can't run on him. They haven't given up a single run of over 10 yards through 3 weeks against James Conner. I know Kenyon Drake's not the best back in the world, but Miami can run the ball at times, and then obviously against Le'Veon, who might be the best back in the world. So, not to give up a run of 10 yards to those three teams, that's not a fluke. These are three teams that can run the ball at times. especially Pittsburgh and the Jets with Le'Veon. So that's been really impressive. In the secondary, the Jets did a lot of, which I was actually pretty surprised about. They were really worried about their offensive line against the Patriots, and rightfully so. I don't think they thought that they could block the Patriots with just five guys. So they left a lot of guys in. They left the tight end in. They left the back in. There were a lot of plays where they're basically max protecting, and they're only sending three guys into the pattern. So you got three receivers going into the pattern against four Patriots a lot of the time. And you got Stephon Gilmore and Robbie Anderson. You have Jason McCourty on Jamison Crowder, or Braxton Berrios and John Jones on either Crowder or Berrios. Those kind of flopped a little bit. You're not winning any of those matchups if you're the Jets. Like you got no chance. And you watch the tape, like there's so many instances where there's just three receivers going downfield, and those three guys have it completely shut down, and there's just no place to go. There's a couple instances where guys got open late in the down that, you know, maybe they could have made plays, but by that point the rush is there, you know, and the rush is closing. And they're still doing a lot of the stuff up front that they were doing last year with the rush. They ran two back-to-back zero blitzes early in the game. One was the Collins sack where he was unblocked, and the other was a run blitz that Daron Harmon actually made a tackle on third down behind the line of scrimmage, tackled Le'Veon. So they came out firing with a lot of blitzes and a lot of zero. And then they really just kind of cycled in those games. The game went along with all those guys up front. You mentioned Jamie Collins. I wrote about him today. The versatility of Jamie Collins right now is crazy. Like, they have him lining up all over the place. He's playing on the edge. He's playing off the ball linebacker. He's playing a little bit slot, like a Sam Nickel role almost in their base defense. And he actually logged three snaps at free safety in the first 2 weeks of the season. They got him playing some safety. So he's lining up all over the place. I'm sure you've watch a ton of college football, so I'm sure you've seen that kind of like halfway player role in a base.
Right.
They have the linebacker covering the slot. That is an element that they definitely could not have done in years past. You know, that's something that they can do now because they have a guy that's athletic like Jamie Collins.
Yeah, I think it. Every defense or defensive coordinator that I talked to that uses a guy like this, like, it was a different sort of name for it. It's like a joker or a robber, you know, something like that, you know, but it's like a queen on the chessboard. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's what he is right now. He's everywhere.
Yeah. So it's a very hard player to find, even though you see it in college a lot, because in the NFL, the players are so much better. But you do see it in college, and it's I think it's starting to be something that you want to draft. But again, it's hard to find that actual players can do it, you know, and somebody who's smart enough to learn all those different roles at the NFL level, that takes time. And, you know, maybe Collins' experience, you know, over the years has helped him sort of, you know, learn all the different packages that they can use him in. Because when you have that many different responsibilities in the NFL, it can be overwhelming, and you can start thinking too much and playing slow. But he's getting it. You know what I mean? And he's definitely not playing slow.
No.
You know, and he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the instincts. And so I think it's just a cool thing to see his maturation with this team.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about Michael Bennett in a second, but on Michael Bennett's sack, he was playing that slot, you know, halfway role, whatever you want to call it, and he was reading out a spot concept. So they have the guy running the flat and the little spot or hitch route right behind it, and the player that Falk is reading on that play is Jamie Collins. And if Collins goes with the flat in like a man look or a zone look, and he's running with the flat, then he's going to hit the little hitch route. If Collins stays and covers the hitch, he's going to hit the flat. And Collins just kind of like hung out in between both of the routes. And he's so freaky and so athletic that Falk had to hold the ball, because he's worried that if no matter which one he picks, like, Collins can probably jump it, because that's how quick he is. And so just watching him be able to play in space like that out of a base defense. So when you play a team like New York that has a really good running back, And if you go, you know, as we move forward here, when they play, like, for instance, Baltimore, who has an amazing rushing game, or Dallas, who has a really good rushing game, they can play base defense and still have an athletic guy that can play in the slot without having a nickel corner on the field. Mm. And that's what Collins is presented with them right now. And then he can add into the rush. He can drop into coverage. He can play against the run. I mean, there's not anything that he can't do. Right now, he's doing it all. He leads the team in tackles. He leads the team in tackles for loss. He leads the team in tackles against the run. He has a bunch of tackles behind the line of scrimmage against the run. You know, it's just over and over again, we just are seeing him play so well. And I think the thing that shocks me the most about it is what you mentioned, and that is that he's been able to learn all of these roles. And when he was in Cleveland, all of the kind of reports, everything about him in Cleveland was that he wasn't trying, that he was checked out, that he wasn't interested in competing on a bad team, all these stuff. Well, obviously he learned something in his time in Cleveland, and he matured and he grew as a player, you know, in between the years, because now he's doing something that not a lot of players can do in the entire league, playing multiple roles on this defense. So I think that whatever happened in Cleveland, whether it was just physical or mental, I don't know, but he certainly has matured as a player in those 3 years that he was gone. And now he's come back and he's really just been able to blossom. I mean, he's playing the best football of his career. I mean, there's any doubt about that. This is way better than he ever was even the first time around. And he was a pretty good player the first time around.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty remarkable to watch.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is you see that a lot with guys who go somewhere else and come back to the Patriots, or, you know, go start somewhere else and then come to the Patriots. I think the thing about that is when you play on a bad team, it's harder to focus, but to get up for it. When you're playing on a team that's losing all the time, it just makes everything a little bit harder, because it's not an easy game. It's not easy to practice. It's not easy to study. It's not easy to play when you lose and lose and lose. And maybe coming back to a team where he knows, you know, and he's got friends on the team still. He's back together with Dante Hightower, which is, you know, just his guy, you know, you know, and he's on a team that he feels trusted, that maybe, okay, these guys have a plan for me. They haven't given up on me. And also, you know, there might be a little extra motivation when everybody's saying, I'm not good mentally. You know, I'm not a smart football player. I'm not trying. Well, you know, it could be one of those things that motivates him when he hears all that stuff to say, all right, well, let me show you what I can do when I really hunker down. And, you know, I think that could be a part of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And his ability to process things now and click into things and then react to them and actually have his feet match his brain, if you will, you know, and be able to kind of have those two things in harmony has been really, really impressive. And I think the other thing too, now we've gone 10 minutes on Jamie Collins, which isn't a surprise, the ability to move him around and have him be kind of this like chess piece on the board, or queen on the chessboard, or whatever you want to call it. I think that it's unlocked him to just be aggressive and make plays. And I don't think that there's an element, as much of an element right now, of Jamie, you got to play your assignment. You got to play your assignment. You got to play your assignment. I think they realize that he's a playmaker. He's a splash playmaker. That's what he's going to do for this defense. He's going to get into passing lanes. He's going to pick balls off. He's going to make tackles behind the line of scrimmage. He's going to rush the quarterback and get sacks. So all the other 10 guys are kind of, especially in the box too, like the other 6 or 7 guys in the box, they're the ones that are playing gap sound football. They're the ones that are kind of doing their job, so to speak. And it's just letting Jamie roam, and it's letting him just do whatever he wants. And he kept on saying, you know, this is a quiet linebacker group when it comes to talking to the media. We don't get to really get much out of these guys. Jamie never really talks. Dante Hightower, we haven't talked to him in 2 months. You know, right. They're not very talkative guys. But the one thing that he kept on saying when he talked after the game on Sunday is that the 10 other guys on the field are so good that it's making my job easier. And he kept on repeating it. And I just thought at first that he was just saying it just to say something. You know, just right. to say something just, to get us off his back, right? But I think what he's saying, now that I've thought about it some more, is that the other 10 guys are allowing me to just roam and just chase the ball. And everybody else is kind of responsible for all the other kind of little nuances and details. And my job is just to go out there and make plays. And that's what they've kind of been able to do with him this time around. Whereas I think last time around, they were trying to like conform him, you know, they were trying right. to like get him into the do your job mentality. And now they're just like, you know what, you just are a freak. So we're just going to let you just run around and wreak havoc.
Yeah. I think just to build off that, not to go for another 30 minutes.
No, hey, listen.
But is that, you know, he's got a very good IQ for the game.
Yeah.
You know, so he knows, you know, if you sort of let him think on the field like that and to sort of do what you were hinting at, 9 times out of 10, something good is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he's a very good athlete, but he also knows the game really well. He can see things before they happen in a lot of senses. So, you know, I agree with that. I think, but yeah, he's just playing out of his mind, and he's been the best player on the defense.
He's a top graded linebacker in PFF system. If there is like a 4-week award, you know, all pro team, he would be one of the linebackers on the 4-week all pro team, and it will hopefully it continues for them and they can continue to build on this. The last guy we wanted to touch on before we wrap up here is Michael Bennett, who I think Michael Bennett's not playing poorly by any stretch of the imagination, but his snaps are down ticking every single week. It was 37 in week one, 25 in week two, now down to 19 against the Jets. Now I think some of it, and a lot of what happens with the Patriots when you ask the coaching staff, is that they say that some guys are in certain personnel groupings and certain packages, and if those packages don't come up in the game, then they don't play as much. And that's just as simple as it is. I think that there is also an element of it with Bennett. Right now, he's basically a pass rush specialist. He's coming in the game on second and long, third down, and he's not playing a ton on first down and in base defense. That's when they're going with the bigger guys up front.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I also think they don't need him on all three downs either. You know what I mean? Everything's going so well that, you know, you can use him less and not have an issue at all.
Yeah.
So, it's sort of everybody on that defensive line is playing well. Their pass rush is doing well. To me, it's just an issue of, well, do you need him more? No, I just don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that we thought at the beginning of the season, or I thought that it was going to be Trey Flowers in, out, Michael Bennett in. And Michael Bennett was going to get all the Trey Flowers snaps, you know, and that was going to be the way it was going to go. And they just haven't done that. And I my guess is that this was the plan all along with Michael Bennett, was to make him more situational, which is what he was in Philadelphia, by the way, too. Definitely more of a situational role in Philly as well. So I think that this was always kind of the plan. And on the outside, we just obviously weren't privy to the plan. They didn't decide to tell us what they were going to do before the
why
season.
Why would they?
Yeah. So I think that this is probably less of a surprise to everybody in the building than it is in people outside the building, if that makes sense.
Right.
And I really think that it boils down to they want to use Shelton and Lawrence Guy and the linebackers on base downs, early downs, run downs, if you will, to stop the run. And they'll scheme up pressure if they do throw the ball on first down. And then that's the way that it's going to go. And then when they get into third and long or third and medium and they get into second and 10 situations, that's when Bennett is coming on the field. And that's when you get the pass rush. He had a really nice move to sack Falk on Sunday. you know, it was the first sack. The one against Miami happened late in the game when it was 43-0, and they're pinning their ears back and they're just coming after the quarterback. This one came more in the flow of the game, which I thought was good. And he had a nice little swim move. They're also rushing him a lot more on the inside. He hasn't done a ton of stuff on the outside because they're really, really hammering home the linebackers as the edge defenders. So he's playing more as like either right in between the guard and the tackle, usually like in like a three tech almost type role, and that's how they're using him. And he had a nice little swim move and he got into the backfield. It's funny because if this defense wasn't playing so well, we'd be talking about, well, where's Michael Bennett, you know, and why isn't Michael Bennett playing more? But it doesn't seem to matter. I don't think it really matters. And as much as I love Trey Flowers as a player, it doesn't seem to matter that he's gone either. At least in the grand scheme of things. I think they missed Trey in certain respects of the game, just in terms of his individual talent. But in terms of the bottom line, it obviously hasn't made a difference at all in that respect.
Which is bananas because he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a really good player. That's why I think that individually, you know, they've had to use, for example, they've had to replace Trey Flowers with multiple guys. You know, They haven't been able to just plug one guy in. They've had to replace him really with a combination of Bennett and John Simon and Jamie Collins, really, is kind of where I would say that they've gone. And maybe even a little bit of Adam Butler, too, in certain packages. So they've had to use three or four or five guys to replace Trey Flowers. So in that respect, it has. But those guys are playing so well and the scheme is working so well that it doesn't really matter. All right, here we go. That's finally, can I wrap this thing up? You got anything to tease? What's going on with Mass Varsity?
Well, on Friday, I'll be going to a high school game. And then on Saturday, I'm planning on being at Wake Forest at BC. Wake Forest is still undefeated. We're still
Wake
trying to
Forest.
Figure. Yeah. They beat
the basketball.
I know, right? But I think everybody's sort of trying to figure out who in the Atlantic Division and the ACC is going to give Clemson a real game, if not beat them. Nobody's probably going to beat them. But Wake Forest is undefeated. They're ranked in the coaches' poll. And also for BC, you know, they had that Kansas loss. They went back and beat Rutgers. If they beat Wake, you know, even though Wake isn't, you know, Wake's not, you know, whatever. But if they beat Wake, that sort of makes up for that Kansas loss a little bit. And so it's one of those 50-50 games that BC has had trouble winning, you know, over the years. And, you know, if they want to go from a 7-8 win program to more than that, they got to win games like this. So I think in that respect, it's going to be pretty interesting on Saturday.
Yeah. I think that BC right now is it fair to say they're underachieving? Because
They should be undefeated. If you lose to the team that loses to Coastal Carolina the week before, like Kansas, listen, I love Les Miles, and I'm glad that he got a win there, but not in a like that. But I mean, I'm happy for Les that he wins. But you should beat Kansas at home when you're a 3-touchdown favorite. They should be 4-0 right now. If they lose to Wake Forest, it's hard for you to not look at this season and say, okay, we're going back to 7-5, 7-6. You know, they need to win that eighth game. This is his seventh season. He's never won more than seven games. And that's sort of the storyline that everybody's been going with. But, you know, if they're supposed to take that next step, they got to win games like this. They got to beat Wake Forest. They got to beat Pitt. You know, they got to beat NC State. They got to beat Syracuse, you know, before you worry about Clemson and Notre Dame and teams like that. You got to beat these teams.
Yeah. Clemson they play Clemson every year, right? Because the conference. Yeah, that game will be interesting for BC. Those guys at Clemson, it's unbelievable how much talent that football team has. It's an embarrassment of riches down there in Clemson and Alabama too, but Clemson in particular this year, I feel like is absolutely stacked. On clnsmedia.com, I mentioned the Jamie Collins piece a few times. I posted that today. Film review you know, looking at all the different roles that he's been playing in the defense and how effective he's been within those roles. Tomorrow on Wednesday, I should say, because I don't know when you guys are going to listen to this, I'm going to expand a little bit more on that stat that I mentioned about Sony Michel and the play action passing game with him on the field and how I think that maybe the tendency that the Patriots have with Michel, I'm not going to say it's on purpose, but I actually don't think it's killing them as much as people think, because they're getting those chunk plays off of play action, not because of Michel, but because of the play action and the ability to simulate those power rushes and all those kinds of things. There was a couple instances with the Jets game, I mentioned it earlier, the Ryan Izzo play, nobody covered Ryan Izzo because everybody ran in there like it was going to be a running play, and it was a man coverage. And I think Jamal Adams was in man coverage on Ryan Izzo and just didn't cover him because he thought it was a run. And Izzo was wide open. So little instances like that, I think, are kind of paying pretty big dividends for the Patriots, even though Michel is not necessarily rolling on the ground like we would like to see. And then this week, Buffalo Bills, turning the page to Buffalo up there in Buffalo at Orchard Park. I will be there for the game, but Adam and I are going to be back later in the week because we're going to do a Bills preview show. I think that this is a real game. You know, I think that this is a legitimate game. I'm really interested to see what the Bills have done with Josh Allen and if they can scheme it up and if they can kind of give him enough training wheels to actually put together a competitive game on offense to challenge Bill Belichick. You know, I think that that's really going to be the kind of the difference in the game, because it's going to be a defensive battle, I think. At least that's what we all think. They'll probably end up being, you know, 35-32 or something like that, because we all think it's going to be a defensive battle. But it sounds to me like the Bills defense has played out of its mind in a lot of respects. Not quite as good as the Patriots defense, but still very, very good. And they've got talent at all three levels of that defense. Defensive line, Ed Oliver and Jerry Hughes, and they got young, good linebackers. They got Trey White still in the secondary and Jordan Poyer at safety. They got a lot of really good players on defense. And so it's really going to come down to Josh Allen, which is kind of their bottom line in general right now for the Buffalo Bills. So we're going to talk Thursday or Friday to Eric Turner, my friend over there at Cover One, who does a great job of breaking down Bills film and really going through all the Bills film for a while now, even when they haven't been good. So I give him credit for sticking it out. And we'll talk to Eric on Thursday or Friday. We have a full Bills preview for you guys then. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.